Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Alongside Evan Giddings, my man Big Chick behind the glass, this is Dan Avone. News coming down earlier today. Breaking news on a Saturday. That it was learned that Christian McCaffrey, and this had been heavily speculated, is officially on IR, which means he will be out a minimum of the next 4 games. It could be longer, dealing with, obviously, that calf strain and the tendonitis in the Achilles. So the 49ers will be without what was the offensive player of the year, the reigning offensive player of the year, a guy who finished 3rd overall in the MVP voting. And certainly one of the true stars in the NFL. And we're discussing, we want to hear from you, 888-957-9570, as just what sort of impact this will have on the 49ers going forward. Now, we all know what it is that Jordan Mason was able to do on Monday night against the New York Jets when he stepped up with some 28 carries and 148 yards. Is that sustainable? Are you comfortable with Jordan Mason, along with the kid Isaac Garendo, getting a load of the carries as well? Or do you like what is something that I think is very alarming, and that being Deebo Samuel being lined up as the lone setback and also getting carries right up in the middle of that line between the tackles, some 8 carries for Deebo Samuel. But your thoughts on the loss, now the official loss of one Christian McCaffrey for the next month as he goes on IR, as the 49ers now try and deal with the loss of one of the premier players in the NFL, and the security around one Jordan Mason, Isaac Garendo, Taylor, who's number 3 on the depth chart, or do they go out and get another running back again? Jeff Wilson Jr., somebody that knows the system. We know how Kyle Shanahan enjoys players that are familiar with his system, and Wilson is out there. Could he be somebody that they bring on board, or do they just stay in-house with what it is that they have?
Well, like, they're going to need some more depth. I mean, they're going to eventually need to sign another back, probably just to have an extra body on the roster, because not just because of McCaffrey, it just is a position where guys get worn down and get hurt a lot. Jordan Mason could get hurt tomorrow. So you need depth, but I don't know. Like, what was your first reaction when you heard Christian McCaffrey, IR, 4 games out? What did that make you think about, Dan?
Well, first of all, it wasn't a shock, because I think that when you're talking about the calf, as I alluded to, that there's a good chance that he wasn't going to play. And after, of course, hearing from Kyle Shanahan, it almost seemed like an inevitability. If you're asking me my initial thoughts, are you asking me?
Well, I'm just wondering what rattled around your brain, because for me, the first thing I thought of, honestly, was this is why teams are reluctant to pay running backs. This is why the running back market is suppressed. And it's not something you can predict. It's not something you can game plan for or expect. But unfortunately, that's the reality of the position in 2024, is guys get hurt when they get to a certain age or after they have a certain amount of usage. And Christian McCaffrey led the league in touches last year. The last time he led the league in touches, he was hurt. And it's not always a season-ending injury, and I hope this one isn't, but they're injuries that linger. McCaffrey, the year after, when he played 3 games, I think was an ankle injury that kept him off the field for most of the season. You know, Najee Harris is some guy, is a younger player, but he's gotten a lot of carries. Look, I'm just looking up and down at the running backs that have led the league in rushes and the years after. So after their body has taken a beating, McCaffrey was last season. This year, he's now dealing with a calf strain slash Achilles tendonitis. In 2022, it was Josh Jacobs that had nearly 400 touches for the Raiders. The next year, he only played 13 games. He dealt with injuries. You go back to 2020, Derrick Henry, who has been kind of a poster child for consistency, but the year he had nearly 400 touches, he tore his ACL the next season. Ezekiel Elliott, after 2018, was, you know, a guy that has been on the decline since then. Le'Veon Bell in 2017, 400-plus touches. That was one of his last elite years. DeMarco Murray's best Pro Bowl season, his last Pro Bowl season was at age 28. LeSean McCoy, age 29. It's just the reality of the position. When you get to a certain age, you fall off, and at a lot of time, it's because of injuries that you can't account for. I'm not saying Christian McCaffrey's career is done, but there's a possibility that we have seen the best of Christian McCaffrey, and it unfortunately comes in a year where the Niners are expecting to compete for a Super Bowl. So that was the first thing that went through my mind, is that McCaffrey was paid this summer, and appropriately so, as the best running back in the league and the highest paid at his position. But right now, what we're talking about, him going on IR, is the exact reason why teams do not want to pay running backs top flight money, because they eventually wear down. And Christian McCaffrey might be reaching that point in his career.
Well, it's certainly something to think about, although the timing is pretty bad. I mean, if you're going to re-up the guy over the offseason for the 4 years and the $64 million, you're thinking about that this guy is still in his prime somewhat. And it's somebody that you're going to rely on not only this year, because he's still in his late 20s. But yeah, there's a lot of, they're disposable. Well, let's just, you know, let's call it what it is. Which is why I think that, you know, the way the 49ers got there in 2019 and using that three-headed monster of Breida, Mostert, and Coleman might be the way to go. And if we learn anything else from anything, if we learn anything from this, is that maybe it's not exclusively just giving the ball 28 times to one guy, but sharing that load back there. And if Jordan Mason continues to prove to people that this wasn't just an outlier in one game performance, but he's a legitimate back, that you're going to reduce the minutes or the usage of Christian McCaffrey regardless going forward. I think that that's, I mean, they always say that running backs only have so many carries in them. And you're beginning to see this. But I would say, just theoretically, Ev, and again, we're overreacting after week one, but as I mentioned, there's only two quarterbacks that threw for over 300 yards. Are we beginning to see, because you know how things are cyclical in sports, especially in the NFL?
Yeah.
For the last decade, it's always been quarterback-centric. Spread it out, let's throw. It's almost like a flag football league, right? It's just, we're going to get shotgun, and we're throwing 80% of the time, which has sort of lent to sort of the devaluing of running backs these days. You have to have a good quarterback in order to win. Are we seeing maybe a shift away from that? When you look with, of course, Harbaugh coming into the league, and you know what Harbaugh is going to do, and he did it last week against the Raiders in his debut as the head coach of the Chargers. The 49ers going 28 carries and 148 yards for one Jordan Mason. Are we going to see potentially where the running back controlling the clock, and as you talked about, establishing control of a football game by running right the hell at them sort of attitude, coming back into the game of football, where it's not necessarily let's throw it every other down, get into a shotgun, but rather let's just get under center and just eat some clock, control the momentum, and dictate the pace of this game and bring back the running game?
Well, I do think it was interesting. We saw someone like Joe Mixon, who's on a new team. I think he had a league-high 30 rushes last week for the Houston Texans. James Cook last week had 19 carries, and then a short week was also used like a bell cow. You know, Najee Harris had 20 carries. I think Barkley had close to 30 touches between rushes and catches. I think it indicates, you know, a lack of preparation from the quarterbacks because they don't play a lot in preseason. Yeah, I think they're a bit rusty. I also think it's about teams trying to ease into the season, and you're able to keep controlling the ball and execute what you want when you're just turning around and handing the ball off. But in regards to the Niners, you know, I do think that Brandon Ayuk not having a full training camp might have impacted how much they were able to throw the ball. Clearly, McCaffrey not being there meant that they had to use Debo, or chose to use Debo, more as a running back than as a wide receiver. And George Kittle was not all that active in the passing game. you know, I think the quarterbacks are a bit behind at this point in the season, but I don't think it necessarily means that all of a sudden running backs are back. I just think it means that week one, or maybe even the first few weeks of the season, teams are going to be more prone to put the ball on the ground and trying to establish the running game. But it isn't as if the individual running back is all of a sudden more valuable. Like, I think running the football might have corrected itself, you know, in the market, but throwing the ball 55 times never helped anybody anyways. Like, every guy that is considered a top flight quarterback or an elite passer has some semblance of a running game. Now, you're game planning for the quarterback, but Patrick Mahomes has Isaiah Pacheco. Joe Burrow, well, prior to this season, had Joe Mixon. Josh Allen has, in fact, the only weapon they didn't take away from his offense was the running back. You know, Jalen Hurts, they went out and got him Saquon Barkley. Like, running backs are valuable, but you can never account for them being there consistently year in and year out. That's why someone like who we see this weekend in Justin Jefferson was made the highest paid non-quarterback, is because up until last year, he hadn't had an injury, he said, outside of his sophomore year in high school. It's just easier for wideouts to stay on the field. So that's why they're getting paid. It's not just about what they can do year in an individual season, but availability is the best ability.
Well, and it's also that you don't necessarily need, because it was, you know, back when I was growing up, it was always, you know, the first 10 guys taken out of an NFL draft, you know, upwards to 4 or 5 of them were running backs, because it was a running back, it was a running sort of dominated league. Like, back in the day, it was all about the Billy Sims of the world. It's not about a quarterback, but do you have what is considered a top-tier running back? And that obviously is not the case. I mean, look at Jordan Mason. And Jordan Mason isn't the outlier, but he was undrafted. And you see a lot of that in the NFL. Your man, who's with the Chargers, Eckler, another undrafted free agent.
I think he's in Washington now, but yeah.
He's in Washington, but a guy that, you know, that...
Yeah,
you see a lot of that in the NFL. You know, when you talk about the status of running backs right now, we think about Saquon Barkley and the contract dispute he had with the New York Giants, and of course he wanted to get paid. Well, he got paid in Philadelphia, and I think we'd all agree it's Christian McCaffrey, maybe Saquon Barkley, 1-2 as far as running backs in the NFL. You know how much he's making this year?
Saquon?
$12 million. $12 million, and he's top paid. And yeah, that's a certainly, relatively speaking, that's a good salary. But when you think about what the wide receivers are making, where everybody's sort of north of 30, that's sort of in that same, you know, boat or regarded in terms of being at the top of their position in the NFL. And the guy's making 12 mil, which just sort of accentuates your point that it's not highly valued on football teams.
Well, you just can't afford to pay them because you don't know if they're going to be there the next year. You know, it is valuable to have an elite running back. We saw that the last two seasons with McCaffrey. There's no doubt he makes everyone's life a lot easier. But the cost of the wear and tear at that position means that you might run into a situation like this season where he's unavailable. And that's difficult to overcome if you are a Super Bowl contender. The reliance on that position, to me, is just... I don't think Kyle Shanahan is relying on Christian McCaffrey. We clearly saw it last week, and we've seen him churn out running backs left and right. But my biggest question is, someone like Brock Purdy reliant on Christian McCaffrey long-term? He wasn't last week, and I think that that'll be the next progression he makes as a quarterback. But he's always had Christian McCaffrey. Since the moment that he has started as the Niners quarterback, he has had number 23 in the backfield, and they have been one of, if not the best, offenses efficiency-wise in the league. How does not having his running back that he's only known impact what he does as a quarterback?
Well, I think it's Brock Purdy throwing the football to Christian McCaffrey is what I think is going to be what's missed most by that of the Niners. Because, again, they've proven... The NFL has proven, but certainly the Shanahans, that it doesn't matter. Our zone blocking, whatever the hell you want to call it, we will get you to the second level. You will get yards running the football under Kyle Shanahan, Mike Shanahan, or Bobby Turner, whoever the hell it is. You will be successful at running the football. The difference with Christian McCaffrey is his ability to get out in the flats, for him to get in that route tree. And I think he'll be missed. The area that I think that Brock Purdy will miss him the most is throwing to him. That's the one thing.
I agree.
The addition that he provides and what separates him from all other running backs. As far as running the ball, yeah, Christian McCaffrey's better than Jordan Mason, no doubt. But is the drop-off that vast? No. I said that last week. You'll be okay. And again, because the running back position, it is what it is right now, is why I think you can still, if your goal is to win a Super Bowl, then Christian McCaffrey isn't the deal-breaker. The running back position is as we've talked about, does not decide whether or not you're going to be a good team offensively, especially when it comes to the 49ers. Not to take anything away from the talent of the young man, but again, the position has been proven that you can get undrafted guys who sometimes are just as good and not miss a beat. The one area of concern is going to be throwing the football. But again, I think you can offset that by throwing more, maybe now to Kittle, or maybe Debo has a bigger role, and Brandon Ayuk's got to step up. Maybe Juwan Jennings, who is also, speaking of not being available and being hurt, but Juwan Jennings, and you're going to get Ricky Pearsall back at some point. Now maybe they have bigger roles because McCaffrey's out. But I'm okay with Jordan Mason, and I don't think a running back in 2024 is going to decide whether or not you ultimately win that Super Bowl. That is the end game for the 49ers this year.
No, I don't think so. But then again, it's Christian McCaffrey is a whole hell of a lot more important to his offense than other running backs are to theirs. You know, and I think it is because of what you're talking about. It's because he's the ultimate safety blanket. He can run the ball 30 times if you need. He can also catch 100 passes in a season if you need. He can also, on third down, be used in pass protection. He's somebody that can be on the field at all times and do everything. He's a perfect running back. The thing that gives me some optimism is that the Niners, as opposed to other teams, are more equipped to replace not the player individually, but the production of the player. And that's because they have, honestly, number one, they have Debo Samuel, who does a lot of similar things that Christian McCaffrey can do as far as catching out of the backfield, running like a running back. I just wonder if at this point in the season, asking Debo to play that way for 16 straight weeks, if that is something that is wise long-term for him this season. Because Debo is already, he's not, I wouldn't label him as injury-prone, but he gets nicked up. He's going to miss a few games. It's just going to happen. But is that process expedited by the fact that he's got to make up for where McCaffrey now isn't?
Oh.
And he's on the sidelines. And that's football. Next man up. Debo's going to get the rock, and Debo's going to be, he's going to have a lot more on his shoulders this season. Hopefully he turns back the clock and they get 2021 Debo, who's a first team all pro, 1,700 scrimmage yards, 16 touchdowns, a lot of them on the ground, all the rest. But if you're trying to keep your team at peak health heading into the postseason, I'm not even talking about McCaffrey, but just the rest of your team, I mean, I think there's a big trickle down effect.
Listen, Debo can get the ball more now that McCaffrey's out, but hopefully not as the lone setback going a gap off the guard. That to me is a recipe for disaster, especially guys you talked about that plays to contact, but also as a result often gets injured. All right, let's get out to the phone lines. 888-957-9570. Let's kick things off in San Mateo and say hello to Steel Toe. Steel, what's up, man?
Thanks, fellas. Thank you for taking my call. Yeah, I think I'm one of the rare fans that is looking at Christian McCaffrey's injury, where I think I'm willing to sacrifice this year and let him rest the whole year because we gave him his extension on his contract. And in order to get that your money's worth for that extension, I'm willing to sacrifice this year to get Christian McCaffrey 100% for next year and get the McCaffrey that we all know and love. And I don't want him to try to get into this year and maybe let this injury linger for the rest of his career. I didn't really like how the Warriors kind of did that to Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant gave us two championships and they didn't even give him that 1 year to rest to possibly bring him back to 100%. So I don't want the 49ers to do that to Christian McCaffrey. I still believe there's a chance to bring back Christian McCaffrey at 100% and keep this window of Super Bowl opportunity alive. Thank you.
Thank you, Steele. And I got to tell you, here at 95.7 The Game in the studios, I got Big Chick who's laughing at you.
Hey,
I got
Evans laughing at you. Hey, Steele Toe, I'm on an island here, all right? They're trying to roast you. I appreciate the call.
Let me just tell you something.
Well,
Big Chick is laughing. I got to tell you, Big Chick, I'm down with Steele.
Oh, my God.
You lose a lot of the team next year. I mean, you lose the entire secondary next year. This is the window. The window is closing, and that's just a fact.
Well, I think it's more simple than that. It's if you're able to play, you play.
Well, he's obviously not, but I think the point Steele is trying to make is that you just re-upped him. You just reset the running back market with his contract, that this is a long-term play. That he's still in his late 20s, that you have to look, if this thing lingers, you have to look beyond next year when it comes to Christian McCaffrey. You cannot force him back on the field, have him snap that Achilles and he's out for 2 years and the career is in jeopardy. Like, you just, financially, you're beholden to this guy in that contract. Now, it's not all guarantees. I don't know the inner workings of the deal. But it's a long-term play when it comes to Christian McCaffrey, and especially when it gets to the Achilles. And he's right. Kevin Durant was misdiagnosed, quite frankly. He had a calf injury, and then the Warriors said, okay, well, you're fine. Get back out there. Boom. Less than 2 weeks later, he snaps the Achilles, and that's the end of their run in terms of, you know, beating Toronto and trying to win that NBA championship.
But I'm glad he brought that up because similar to McCaffrey, like we heard him say last week that if it was a playoff game, he would have played. I think the same thing could be said about Durant. The fact that it was the championship is why he played. If that was a regular season game or stretch, KD wouldn't have played with that calf strain, but it was the championship. It was the finals. That's why he played, and he risked injury and he got hurt. Christian McCaffrey, I hate to break it to people, but if he can drug up that Achilles by the end of this season and get ready for the... He gonna play. Because, to Carter's point, and it's not just about like this year or the window. If you have a chance to win a Super Bowl, you do everything possible to win a Super Bowl. And the Niners, unfortunately, have gotten very close recently, and they have not won it. But I do not think you can look beyond this season if McCaffrey can get back out there. If he's not 100% and this Achilles lingers, which I think is a possibility, well, then yes, you hold him out because he can't help you when he's on the field if he's hurt. But if he is able to go, he will play this year. Because the Niners, I do think, need him if they're going to reach their optimal offensive level.
Let's get out to Larry hanging out in San Francisco. It's on your mind, man.
Hey, what's going on, fellas? This is the way I look at it, man. You know what? We really need him in the playoffs, man. You know, you put him on short-term on the IR. If he comes back, he's still not 100%. Just keep holding him out. You know, just keep holding him out until he's ready to go, you know? Because really, in the playoffs, if he blows his Achilles tendon in the playoffs, then he blows it in the playoffs. You know what I mean? But if he's healthy and ready to go, I mean, in the playoffs, that's a bonus, man, to us. You know what I mean? And still, there's no chance. I mean, there's no certainty that he won't, as soon as he starts playing, when we think he's set, that he won't re-blow it. You know what I mean?
No, I'm with you, Larry. It's an area that you, and especially when you step onto the field, you can't simulate this stuff in practice. That you have no idea where that tendon's at. You know it's weak, and if it snaps, it snaps. I'm with you. You just got to, like, give this thing time. That's the only thing that can heal this thing. It's going to be time. If he's out for the next 5 months and comes back in January, would you be okay with that, Ev?
Yeah, if you get him on the field and he can play, yes. And, you know, look, I also hate to break...
Drug him up, according to you?
What do you think football players do every Sunday, Dan? I mean, they don't just sit there drink Capri Suns before the game.
If he comes back sooner rather than later, and he snaps that Achilles and is out, and his career is in... I mean, an Achilles, we always talked about how tenuous the position is, but for a running back who's approaching 30 and he tears his Achilles, you're talking about, you know, that could be the end of the guy. I don't know. There might be blood on the hands of the 49ers instead of waiting or erring on the side of let's just give this a little bit more time.
Well, my last thing before we hit the break, the blood is on the position. I mean, if we're being honest, the reason why you can't look ahead and try and preserve McCaffrey for the future, I hate to break it to you, history of position says he doesn't have much time left. He's 28 years old. He's going to be 29. Running backs' careers die at the age of 28. That's what happens in the NFL. Some have been able to prolong it for a little bit. Adrian Peterson, I think, had an all-pro, so he rushed for 2,000 yards after an ACL tear at age 30. That's not something that I'm going to rely on happening
Frank
to Christian
Gore,
McCaffrey.
Baby. Frank Gore.
But Frank Gore, I guarantee you, after the age of 30, was not the same back. He played for a long time, but he extended his career by being a backup, by bouncing around. He was not the same rusher he was in his 20s, and that's just the reality of the position. So the other reason why I'm trying to get McCaffrey back out on the field, because he probably doesn't have many elite carries left, if any at all, after suffering this injury.
All right, we continue here on 95.7 The Game. Your thoughts, the breaking news coming down earlier today that Christian McCaffrey officially on IR.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
Which means he'll be unavailable to the San Francisco 49ers for the foreseeable future for the next 4 games. Where do the Niners go from here? How significant is it? A loss for San Francisco? And we'll also want to get into the defense, but we'll continue to talk about Christian McCaffrey, Evan Giddings, Big Chick, Dan Avone. 95.7 The Game rolls along after this.
Back to 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. Got a half an hour to go. News coming down today that Christian McCaffrey has been put on IR. He'll be out for the next 4 games. Not available for the Minnesota Vikings tomorrow, so next man up, and that next man happens to be one Jordan Mason. We've been kicking it around. Evan Giddings, Dan Avone, Big Chick behind the glass as we continue to talk about the Niners and where do they go from here without one of their biggest stars in CMC. Let's just get out to New Jersey and hear from our man Mitch. It's been a while. Mitch, what's on your mind?
Hey, guys, doing a long time. Hope everything's well.
What's up?
Yes, sir.
I think you have enough offensive talent on this team to carry on, but he's not going to be 100%. He'd be cleared to play, but just like Tua, I'd be holding my breath next time he carries the ball, and it might be it'd be out longer. I don't want to see him give up any assets. I mean, maybe we can go McCall, Miami, get back the 2X49ers. Yeah, I guess you have to give a 6-round pick. One more guy, and I'll leave you guys alone. Chris Rodriguez on the practice squad, I think with the Washington team. Can you get them? Are you allowed to pick, or you have to give up something for them?
Thanks, Mitch. I have no idea who the hell Chris Rodriguez is.
Well, look, okay, it's... all right, did Cody Schrader get cut, Carter?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay, so that was the guy that I felt like was getting the majority of the preseason snaps at running back. It is funny he didn't make the roster.
Well, he didn't clear waivers.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying they chose not to keep him on the 53-man.
I think if he had cleared, they would have brought him back. But he
would have been on the practice squad. Yeah. Well, it's the same reason why was it Jerick Kingston, their 6th-round pick, I think also got claimed off waivers. He didn't make the practice squad either because he got picked up.
The Schrader's with the Rams.
Yeah. By the way, okay, this is an aside. Not that they would have kept one or both of these players if, but the fact that they had to make a choice about Brandon Ayuk and the keeping a roster spot. I think that is also why they might have been a little bit pissed at him prior to the season because he was taking up a roster spot that might have ended up costing them. I don't know, Cody Schrader or somebody. I'm not saying it's that specific guy, but it could be part of it. Again, it's all we're talking about trickle down effects today, Dan.
It all gets back to Brandon Ayuk, and I'm with the Manning brothers on the couch. Sign that contract and play, young fella. I want to hear about it. Get into camp and catch the damn ball.
All right. First of all, Peyton or Devone, whoever I'm speaking to right now, you got to well, I shouldn't speak. I have a big forehead, too. But my head isn't as big as Peyton Manning's overall.
Really? You want to go there? Wow.
Well, I'm just saying. He's got a cranium. I mean, you've seen that thing.
He's not as good of a quarterback.
He's not as big as Bochy's, but it's pretty big.
That's stupid. Don't say that again.
Look, get off of Ayuk, okay? If he's not where he should be in a couple weeks, then we'll chat. But not being there week one in a game that they absolutely ran away with, to me, was not as big of a deal. Now, if you don't have McCaffrey for an extended period of time, they will need Ayuk to be the all-pro receiver, because it looks like Deebo Samuel's going to be in the backfield RB1.
That's not right.
Or RB2.
I think it's not Brandon Ayuk. It's really sort of an indictment on the whole situation, including the 49ers.
You looking at the front office a little bit differently now? The fact that first guy they paid this summer is the dude who's not on the field?
Yeah, it wasn't very smart.
You gave McCaffrey a guaranteed dollars?
And let's just see how good... Listen, you can sign those contracts for 30 per in the deal that Brandon Ayuk got, but along with that comes pressure. And so... We'll give you the mulligan in week one, right? We'll say, okay, your timing's off, but bro, 30 mil is 30 mil a year. You better hang on to the football and you better produce like it is that you did a year ago. So the pressure's just squarely on him. Be that number one. That's what we paid you for.
Well, it's not his fault, but Christian McCaffrey's not even on the field. I'm just saying, like, if there's an expectation for Ayuk to produce, at the very least, he's getting snaps. McCaffrey just got 2 years of guaranteed money. The first thing that happens to him, he can't control, but his Achilles goes.
Yeah, I would have to think
or
that
starts.
That would be certainly in the discussion when the 49ers were...
Yeah, just give him the 19.
But they had to have known, like, to Big Chick's point, when he came to San Francisco, he had a history of getting hurt frequently with Carolina. He was like the biggest tease. Like, he was so good with the Panthers, but he would miss so much time because of those injuries. But thankfully, that hasn't been the case here in San Francisco. And sure enough, he gets the new deal and whap. It's almost eerily similar in a completely different vein, like that of Tua Tagovailoa. Remember Tua? Well, I mean, Tua has the three concussions. And then
we know of.
Then he goes through 2023... And he's injury-free or he's concussion-free, and the Dolphins extend him to this contract, which now really becomes sort of a sticking point. But it's almost as though you have this short memory. Same thing with McCaffrey. Oh, he's been healthy with the 49ers. Let's extend him. Forgetting the fact that he plays the running back position, and there's a lot of wear and tear on those tires, and that one way to look at this is that injury is looming.
Yeah,
so
it is. I mean, look, McCaffrey's the best at his position when he's healthy. But to your point, throughout his career, he's had now three seasons that have been severely impacted by injuries. So, it sucks. And I personally hate it because I love watching Christian McCaffrey play. He's unbelievable at what he does. But I don't know. It does make me rethink the hesitancy that the Niners did or didn't have this summer in regards to signing him, because apparently that was the easiest decision to make because it got done so quickly, whereas Trent and Ayuk, who play positions in which injuries do not happen as frequently, were the ones that took the longest. That was the biggest dollars, but at the same time, you're not getting anything for your $19 million right now.
True.
I mean, you're getting something for your... I don't know how much Jordan Mason makes, but it's not that much money.
Oh, God. You talk about...
JP.
He may be... I didn't think this would even be possible, but in that backfield, we thought the best deal in the world is Brock Purdy. It might now be Jordan Mason if he becomes that guy, if he becomes running back one on a good football team. What's he pulling down, Big Chick? Can you look that up?
Probably like 800K.
I'd say it's less than that.
I mean, yeah, if that...
He went undrafted, man.
Which, by the way...
He's getting free meal on a 12-pack.
Well, he's always been buried behind great backs, I think. If I remember correctly, Jordan Mason in college... Oh.
That's right, by the way, 856.
All right, so... Sorry about that. That was rude. No, but Jordan Mason went to Georgia Tech where he... So he was buried behind a three-year starter, I think, and then his senior season, he didn't beat out this freshman who ended up transferring to Georgia. His name is Jahmyr Gibbs. So he's always been stuck behind like these great running backs, and now that he's finally got his opportunity, he's probably like, dude, I want 40 carries a game. Like, I haven't had a chance to run the football for what feels like years since high school. And the last 2 years, he's had 43 and 40 carries, and he's gonna eclipse that by the end of tomorrow, I think.
Well, I think in all seriousness, I know that they're going to look. You need some depth at the position, and whether it's Jeff Wilson Jr., whether it's somebody with the Miami Dolphins that, you know, that's familiar with what it is that the 49ers do in terms of running the ball. I think Isaac Guerrero is a guy that you drafted. He's somebody that got hurt with that hamstring, but then played a lot of football in the preseason and looked good. He's pulling down, you know, he's getting a paycheck from San Francisco. Go ahead and give him the ball. I mean, he's not going to be the number one. That's Jordan Mason, but I think he now has to move up in the rotation. This idea of bubble wrapping him because he's a rookie doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I think that I'm from what I saw, Isaac Guerrero was another guy, just a big fella with remarkable speed. I mean, is he like a? I want to say he's like a 4.440 guy.
I mean, Guerrero? Yeah. Oh, by the way, also sorry, Gibbs was Alabama, not Georgia. He went to Georgia Tech. So the thing about it is, like, yeah, I don't mind using up Mason. You don't mind using up Guerrero, so to speak. It might sound a little harsh.
What you're doing. No, I know. It's not harsh at all. It's exactly the
but
reality.
It doesn't sound harsh when there's not much capital invested in the player, and that's why I think the running back position is not as valuable as it once was, because the shelf life is not as long. That's why teams don't give up picks generally for a player like McCaffrey. Now, those players don't become available that often, but Jordan Mason was undrafted. Guerrero was one of the first running backs taken. I don't know if he was the first. He was one of them. He's a fourth-round pick. So you can find, I mean, Isaiah Pacheco, again, for example, is a seventh-round selection by the Kansas City Chiefs. The last first-round running back to be a focal part of a Super Bowl, off the top of my head, Marshawn Lynch? I mean, the Seattle teams in the early 2010s, I mean, we did this exercise yesterday during the midday show, Dan, and it was like, I mean, the running back that has the most postseason success is probably the Garrett Blunt by virtue of playing for the Patriots.
Go
and
Ducks.
Then he was on that Eagles team that beat the Patriots. But yeah, LeGarrette Blunt. LeGarrette Sucker Punch. That's what I think what a lot of people call him. but to my point, it's not like you're not looking at the Ezekiel Elliott, who is a first-round pick, Derrick Henry, you know, who is up there, Christian McCaffrey. Those players typically aren't on Super Bowl-winning teams. In fact, the fact that Christian McCaffrey was the leader and, according to the MVP ranking, was the most important offensive player in the Niners last season, the fact that he was the driving force to a team that made the Super Bowl in itself is a rarity in the modern game.
We've seen so much success with undrafted running backs in the NFL that we know that you can find people at that position. That combined with the fact, again, Jordan Mason undrafted coming out of Georgia Tech, that combined with the innovative scheme, that zone scheme that is the 49ers, and the way they run the football, I think it's not anybody, but it's darn close to it that you could plug in back there, and they're going to have success. Now, are they going to be as good as Christian McCaffrey? No, but again, there isn't going to be suddenly this vast drop off where we want to run the football, but we can't because Christian McCaffrey isn't here. That's not going to be the scenario going forward with San Francisco, and it's not going to be, in my estimation, the reason as to why. Or why not, you don't win a Super Bowl or whatever it is the final goal is going to be. Christian McCaffrey is good, but I think that Trent Williams, Fred Warner are more valuable on this football team. And so Jordan Mason just carved up the Jets for nearly 150 yards. You can win with Jordan Mason. You won't be as good, but you can still win. And you can win consistently without the likes of Christian McCaffrey.
I just think offensively there's less room for error. McCaffrey is a player that turns nothing plays into something, and they have one less of those guys. I also think it puts more pressure on their defense to play like they did last week against the Jets. And, you know, I don't know if the Jets offensively Like, I think they'll eventually be a better offense, but considering Rodgers hadn't played in 610 days or whatever, or hadn't, I guess, played a full game in 610 days, like, that wasn't an offense that I expected all of a sudden just blow the doors off. The Vikings, you can make a case, are further ahead, you know, with Sam Darnold at the very least having a full preseason to get acclimated. But they're missing their number two wide receiver. You know, Aaron Jones is a guy that's given the Niners some hell in the past, but how's he going to run behind a brand new offensive line? Look decent week one. You know, there are more questions, I think, maybe about the Vikings offense. But the Niners, like this group defensively looks much more buttoned up than last year.
Yeah, I would agree.
So, you know, to me, it is as much about McCaffrey being gone and trying to figure out how you're going to replace him as it just makes everyone's life more difficult than it needs to be. And fortunately, the Niners are a team as talented as they are. Even without McCaffrey, you could make the argument they're still the most talented team in football, which is saying something. But putting McCaffrey in that group just gets you far beyond the top. And it's honestly what made last year so disappointing, because that team was just stacked.
They were stacked. And just to talk about defense for a second before we get out of here. Wasn't something was just amiss defensively, because you looked at them, and again, when you looked at the talent in the roster with Fred Warner and Drake Greenwell was healthy, and you know, you did Charvarius Ward, I think I gave you this statistically, next to McDuffie and Sauce Gardner, is like the third best corner in the NFL. Diamador Lenore has emerged as a premier corner. I mean, they're so good, and you're like, well, why are you getting carved up on the ground? There was always something like, what's going on? Defensively, it was sort of a head scratch last year. And I hate, because he's already been scapegoated enough, but I really do think it gets down to Steve Wilks, that there was just something wrong schematically with him and the way the 49ers have played defense historically, at least under the reign of Kyle Shanahan. And I think they got back to that with Nick Sorensen. We'll see. Again, it was just week one. But that defense looked dominant again. And, you know, if that's the case, the 49ers, just like anybody else, you win Super Bowls with that defense. The hell with McCaffrey. You got enough offensively. That's not the real concern. If you really want to pull back the layers and talk about whether you're going to be a good or bad football team, it's about that defense. And if they can get back, if Leonard Floyd can actually be that guy who can set the edge, which you haven't had since Dee Ford, and that defensive line with, you know, with Collins and Jordan Elliott, if all those guys are legit against the run, then, you know, that's how you're going to win that damn Super Bowl. It's not McCaffrey.
Yeah, you always got to win in the trenches, and I think the Niners didn't do that enough last season, you know, for me to feel confident in them. But this year, it's a different group. You know, I think, look, Malik Collins stood out to me. I thought he looked really good up front. I mean, he was tossing around Jets offensive linemen. But I also wasn't necessarily that high on the Jets. So, you know, like the defense last year, week one, looked really good. And that was against a Steelers team that was basically just going to line up with Najee Harris and try and run it down your throat. They couldn't do it. But I think the two newcomers, yeah, Malik Collins and then Leonard Floyd, much more diverse. Like, Floyd can get to the quarterback, but also because, Dan, he's really tall, and he's extremely long. And he's someone that not only has been on the field for the majority of his career, but he also has eyes in the backfield that feels like it all is tall at all times. He is, I think, what this team has been missing as far as not just a second end opposite Bosa, but also a veteran pass rusher. They really haven't had one probably since Dee Ford, but he can play the run and the pass, and I'm excited to see what he and Collins continue to do, because I did not believe that Malik Collins was that good, but he looked like, I mean, just a boulder against the Jets on Monday night. Jordan Elliott, I'm not sure, was incredibly impressive to me, but you know, he's depth. Once they get Gross Matos back, he'll probably be in the rotation as well.
He was good in the preseason.
He was. So, you know, the defensive line was not a concern for me heading into the year, but was something that I was curious about. Felt confident in their secondary.
Well, it had to be a concern because remember how teams were gashing the 49ers, especially towards the end of the year, and running the football.
Oh, no, well, yeah. I just think they were undisciplined last year. Like, they had a lot of undisciplined linemen. I didn't think Chase Young was a disciplined player. Armstead was clearly compromised, and he was hurt. I'm sure they would love to have him back, but didn't work out. And Bosa at times was undisciplined last year. I just think that someone like Collins and Floyd, though they're not as individually talented as, say, Armstead, you know, or Bosa, they might be more buttoned up, and that's kind of just what you need. I think they need solid defensive line, because the moment that Fred Warner gets his eyes on a football, it's his.
He's ridiculous.
Like, the ball carrier is going down, and he does not miss tackles. So even though Devondre Campbell, I think it leaves much to be desired opposite Warner, this defensive group is stout.
Before
for sure.
we get out of here, I got to throw you some love here for your – I'm surprised we haven't talked about it, and I'm surprised you've been sitting on this the entire show for your call last week.
Oh, that's right.
The New England Patriots shocking the world in week one.
That's right. I did call that last week.
And it was
week,
Ev yeah. that made a point of it to say, watch out for New England against Cincinnati. Joe Burrow historically starts slow. And you like New England. Not only did they cover, but they won outright.
They did win outright, which I told you was a possibility.
What's your sleeper this week?
Oh, great question. Honestly, I didn't really look too hard at some of these games. The ones that... So it was mainly about... Because I saw that for all the... Gosh, what is it? Sleeper? No, not sleeper pools.
Can the Patriots keep it going and win against the Seattle Seahawks?
By the way, the Patriots started out 2-0 last year. Just a reminder. And then they... Ended up like, what, 3-14
or
something?
The Jets beat Buffalo in week one last year.
That's true. It was more about, okay, that's right, because 70% of eliminator pools had the Bengals involved in them. So my point was not necessarily just, you know, like, bet the Patriots money line outright, which I did, but also just stay away from the Bengals week one because Joe Burrow absolutely stinks. It doesn't matter who they're playing. This week, the team that I would look out for... Gosh, I would actually. I think the Bears are going to get the Texans on Sunday night.
I thought you were drunk last week.
What? So I'll
hold back. I mean, your call with the Patriots, so you get my respect. But
Houston's six. And I'm looking for kind of bigger spreads that stand out to me. I would take the Bears plus 6.5.
You know, Houston is sort of the sexy pick to get to the Super Bowl out of the AFC this
year. Yeah, I personally don't see it, but that's fine.
Speaking of getting to a Super Bowl.
The lock of the week, by the way, is the Chargers minus 5.
I love
a
lock.
Minus
the Chargers.
5. All right, this is, again.
We need someone with some level of objectivity here.
But it's not so much, just like last week did. It wasn't about the Patriots being good. It was about the Bengals being in a spot. And what we learned last week, because I do not think the Saints are very good whatsoever, they blew the brakes off the Carolina Panthers, and so we are going to be fading them until proven otherwise. And that's what it's really all about. It's not about the Chargers, although I was semi-impressed with them last week. It's about how bad the Carolina Panthers are.
You know what was impressive last week was that Joe Alt's real deal, man. I just saw that guy. Somebody ISO'd on him, the kid out of Notre Dame. He was just pancaking people. He's ridiculous.
Speaking of which, now I would also like Dallas minus 6. I think that'd be the team I'm
against too.
The Saints. Dallas is at home against the Saints, minus 6.
Yeah. All right. You know, by the way, speaking of Super Bowls and getting ahead of ourselves, there was only, to me, two dominant teams, two dominant wins in week one. The Niners and Kansas City. So, obviously, it's only week one. But if
Kansas
we were...
City? They won by a toe tap.
Yeah, I think it was a good one against Baltimore.
Oh, a good one. Yeah.
But, I mean, in terms of just, you know, good play from beginning to end, okay, maybe it's just the Niners. But there wasn't a lot of, you know, decisive where you're like, that's a really good football team.
No, there was a lot of close games. Although, I mean, look, to me, I think that's as far as impressive victories. Actually, I mean, the Vikings might have been the most dominant team last
Sammy
week.
Sammy Darnold, baby.
Your boy. So, hey, who you got tomorrow, Dan? You going to go on a limb and take the team opposite the Niners again?
No, I like the 49ers winning. But, the short week scares me. I'm one of those that just really leans into that. Like a short week now in the NFL, missing that one
day. So
this
is a game you would not bet if you were to.
No, and if I did, I would take the points. But I think the 49ers, I think it's one of those, it's going to be close and last possession type of things. Like I think the Niners win, but it's going to be very close. That's why I don't like, you know, I would take, if I had to, I would take the points.
The other team, I'm not going to lie, I know they did not look very good last week, but I'm sniffing a Bo Nix upset.
Oh my God.
The home opener against the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'm sniffing it, Dan. Okay, we'll give you the underdog money lines here. Bears over Texans, Broncos over Steelers, and
go ahead. Let me hear you go with.
I don't have another underdog. I'm going to say Cowboys and Chargers, but the two underdog money lines I will be betting on will be the Bears and the Broncos.
Yeah, Bo Nix did not look good either.
No, he did not.
In fact, it just goes...
You can't look any worse.
just goes to show you none of those guys
did. The Steelers kicked 6 field goals last week.
No, Steelers, listen, the Steelers, I don't think they scored a touchdown.
No, they didn't. No, they didn't.
Justin Fields and Russell Wilson, both bad. So, well, we'll see. All right.
By the way,
Russ isn't taking on Denver. That sucks.
What? What do you mean?
Russell Wilson.
Why do you want to see Russell Wilson? You were the one that called Justin Fields being the starter anyways.
No, but I just think the scenario of him playing, you know, let's ride and going back to Denver would have been fun.
I'm sure Denver's happy they don't have to see him either. Well, actually, maybe they want him on the field for the other team. I don't know. I mean, they're trying to bench him to basically save themselves some money last year. This was a guy. Oh, you talking about redemption stories and quarterbacks and don't write him off? You wrote off Russell Wilson in Seattle.
Well, that's because he's old and garbage.
Well, but he wasn't 4 years ago.
Well, 3 years ago, he was still getting... Well,
coming off of poor seasons, but...
Yeah, all right. No, the cancel culture when it comes to quarterbacks. Jared Goff, Baker Mayfield, Geno Smith...
Jimmy Garoppolo.
I wasn't going Jimmy G. But I'm not done with Jimmy G. He will get another opportunity. All right, that'll do it for all of us. We'll see you back here next week, Big Chick.
By the way, tomorrow, beginning at 8 a.m., the kickoff
8 o'clock
show.
Tomorrow, it's the kickoff show. Devin you and Lo Neal.
Lorenzo Neal, right here.
Don't forget, 95.7 The Game is where you start your football Sunday locally. 8 o'clock, it's Evan Getting, it's Lo Neal. They'll prep you for kickoff, which will be at 10 a.m. It's the Niners, it's the Vikings, and then afterwards, of course, we'll have the post-game show, and then we'll talk about it all next week, and Evan and I will be back after it next Saturday. Until then, enjoy the weekend, everybody. So long.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey. See ya.